Rob, let me ask you a question as a fellow homeowner. Do you know what a thermocouple is?
Don't you use a hydro spanner to fix a thermocouple?
Nope, you just use aluminum foil. The thermocouple is the thing in your heater that, like, when you turn on the heater and you put the temperature all the way up to like 84 degrees and it's stuck at like 63.
Right.
It's probably because your thermocouple isn't working.
So it's a fancy name for aluminum foil?
No, you use the aluminum foil to rub off like the carbon that has gotten on it.
Carbon scoring?
Yes, the carbon scoring. And then can sense the temperature again. Sorry. And then your heater magically works again. Okay. But after you do that, you have to spend maybe a good 3 or 4 hours trying to figure out how to light the pilot light, maybe.
Oh, yeah. So it did. I had to do that at my mother-in-law's house once. Okay. And I went to YouTube and found it instantaneously, and everyone made fun of me, and it took me like 10 minutes, luckily.
I went to YouTube too, and it took me quite a while until I figured out I don't have a pilot light, which is maybe the only instructions that I need for the heater. If I had to just, you know, make a small suggestion, why don't you just put it in the logo? Just carrier. It doesn't have a fucking pilot light.
It's time. Time for a thrilling story of romance, adventure, mystery, anything with an expired copyright. It's time for another Interrupted Tale.
Hello, and welcome to the show that usually ends. Another episode of Interrupted Tales, the podcast where my friend and I take turns reading stories to you, the listener, while the other person constantly interrupts. As always, I am Rob, and I'm joined tonight by my good friend, co-host, and cohort, Alan. Alan, how are you?
I feel like you're being a little aggressive to the audience there, Rob.
They will like this podcast, they will listen to this podcast, and they will rate and review this podcast on they can do whatever they want.
Okay, all right.
Free. Yes, but no, the listener. We are all about you.
What are you going to give the listener tonight, Rob?
I'm going to give them tonight a home run of a tale from Wide Awake magazine from January 10th, 1916. This is the magazine that dares you to fall asleep while reading.
It's, you know, it's got a lot more subscribers than Stephen Miller's Nodding Off quarterly.
So this is called The Shock by Grant Trask Reeves, who's either an author or a Marvel Comics supervillain. And now it's time to grab a drink and curl up in your favorite chair while we read you this week's tale. When Rube Reynolds crawled out of bed and began to dress, it was near to noontime.
Don't misread that. He's actually a hard worker. He's just stuck on West Samoa time. It's a lot of jet lag.
he's a Rube Reynolds, world traveler. Within his head, to all feeling, a gigantic, throbbing trip hammer was seemingly striving to pound its way through his skull with regular painful thumps.
Logistics question. Mm-hmm. Do you call it binge watching if you read the labels on the tequila?
Yes, but you're usually traveling back in time by that point. His lips felt parched and drawn, and a sickish, bitter taste stayed upon his tongue as if his mouth was crammed with coarse, moldy earth, and by no means of futile gulping could he swallow the stuff.
Okay, that is basically the definition of being a corpse. If you feel like your mouth is full of coarse, moldy earth, you might be a corpse.
If your rotting flesh has rotting flesh, you might be a corpse.
If the maggots in your brain decide to come out and have a barbecue, you might be a corpse.
Out of the confused muddle of his brain flashed a thought of morning practice. Guess I'll have to skip breakfast to get out to the field on time, he thought.
Yeah, who has the time to prepare a raw egg anyway?
But a glance at his watch lying upon the bureau made him aware that haste was useless, for probably at that moment his fellow members of the Sox were leaving the ballpark for their homes and boarding places.
Yeah, there's Kate Upton's place. There's Adriana Lima's place. I mean, Alyssa Milano wrote a whole book about her place.
I like that book.
Did you? I've never read it.
It's a good place. That's all I'm saying. Well,
let me tell you, she's got a good... I like her line of... what do you call it? I'm going to give her a shout out.
I love her Milano cookies.
Touch. Alyssa Milano touch.
What was it?
It's a line of sports clothing for women that ushered
right.
in the like cute, I don't know how shapely women's versions instead of just jerseys.
No, I remember that. Yeah, good for her. You go, Milano.
Yeah, all right.
Again, he had missed a morning session on the home grounds of the Sox, and he sullenly wondered what manager Canale would say.
Probably something like, the umpire is blind, or integration over my dead body.
Slowly, he continued to don his clothes. At times, the bed, the chairs, and other articles of furniture seemed to be dancing and whirling weirdly about the room. And when he leaned forward to lace his shoes, his throbbing head pained as though it would burst.
Head on, applied directly to the forehead.
Head on.
No,
just head on.
Yeah.
Moving to the bureau, he pulled out a lower drawer and brought forth a bottle partially filled with a brownish liquid.
Could be liquor, could be beef bouillon. Either way, I'm thirsty.
To his lips, he tipped it, and for several seconds, his Adam's apple bobbed convulsively to a gurgling accompaniment. Barely at the halfway mark, between 20 and 30 years, Reynolds had already reached the stage where a morning drink seemed a necessity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his liver really kind of expected the company. He doesn't want to disappoint it.
He lowered the bottle, its contents emptied by half to the bureau top, and an artificial sense of buoyancy pervaded his being. The throbbing pain in his head was deadened to a dull ache, and the burning flavor of the liquor upon his tongue had washed away the moldy taste.
What a gorgeous phrasing that is. It's basically a Listerine ad right there.
I think it's an ad for Tito's vodka, personally.
Sorry, I wouldn't know. I only drink Evian. It's what he recommends.
Turtle's favorite vodka. He dully pondered as to what had taken place on the previous evening. But his remembrances of events occurring after 11 o'clock or thereabouts on the night before were decidedly limited.
Oh. Okay, to be fair to him, that's the same thing that happens if you fall asleep. You get very hazy on the details of what's going on, so...
It's true. Maybe he just fell asleep and then woke up dead.
Yeah.
Same story. Someone had escorted him to the front door of his lodging house. He had dizzily ascended the stairs and managed to open the door of his room. That was all he could recall. A gentle tapping on the door broke in upon his thoughts.
What is it?
He grunted.
Mr. Keneally wishes to see you, was the reply.
The voice belonged to his landlady. Reynolds hesitated momentarily. He was tempted to have the landlady say that he was not at home.
Actually, he's right here next to me. Also, I have very poor hearing, so he's the one that just told me what you said. Also, the door I tapped on is wide open, and we've already had several complaints from passers-by about your state of nudity and the frankly inconceivable amount of vomit you're currently laying in.
It sounds rude, but she's just looking out for her investment. Those floors are going to need to be cleaned.
He's not going to do it.
But what was the use? Keneally would bawl him out later, so why not have it over with? All right, send him up, Reynolds answered. He had hardly time to whisk the bottle from the bureau to its place in the drawer when an imperative rapping threatened the door panel.
Oh, Rob, imperative rapping is probably my favorite genre. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Busta Rhyme, Give Me Some More. Lil Jon, Get Low.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, NWA, Fuck the Police, which is kind of a strange command considering the rest of the lyrics of the song.
It's a good point.
I don't know if that's...
Should have rethought that title. Come in, he called. As the door swung inward, a big brawny form filled the doorway, almost from casing to casing.
And you thought we were done with gelatinous cubes, Rob.
The problem is gelatinous cubes are never done with us, Alan.
Yeah.
The square-jawed visage of Owen Keneally, with its twinkling eyes and smiling lips, had appeared on sporting pages the country over. But now the smile was missing.
Oh, well, let's just see if we can find that smile, mister. Who's a cuddle monkey? Yes, who's a cuddle monkey? Is it you?
Oh, stop.
Okay.
His eyebrows were puckered forward, as Reynolds had sometimes seen them when Keneally took a parting shot at a nearsighted, obstinate umpire.
Or that time he got his threading appointment done at a mall kiosk instead of a real salon. I kept telling him, Brenda does wonders, but, you know, he says it's too expensive.
Threading is always worth it. That's all I'm going to say about that. The big manager remained standing, his gaze upon the ball player. Good morning, Reynolds greeted as he continued the knotting of his scarf.
Excuse me while I get decent. I'm sorry you had to see me in such an un-Mr. Furley state.
Good afternoon, retorted the manager.
Oh, man, afternoon. I'm never going to get an Egg McMuffin at this rate.
Well, it's all day now, Alan.
I'm just going to have to stay up all night. It'll be worth it.
And he added, you're fined $50. Reynolds whirled around. What for? He demanded, his voice raised to nearly a shout. For not showing up at morning practice. And for drunkenness last night. You're half drunk now.
Okay, well, if that's the problem, I can either solve it in about 5 hours, or I can solve it in 2 Jaeger bombs. So, which one do you want there?
Jaeger bombs.
Okay.
Reynolds hesitated to speak the word.
Whoa. Rob, if you're going to play body part, ethnicity, or word you could put in front of sandwich, you got to give me a clue first.
Sandwich.
Ooh, that's rude.
Rude sandwich? No, I know. You son of a sandwich. His lips were curled back in an ugly snarl, and he glared rebelliously into the steady, piercing eyes of the manager. Silently, they faced each other. Reynolds the tiger, Keneally the lion.
The landlady, some kind of meerkat. Not directly involved, but watching the whole thing from her hole.
Both were equally tall, though the manager was stockier than his black-eyed, dark-complexioned pitcher. Keneally removed his Panama and combed his fingers through his reddish-brown hair.
Your face is as flushed as if you had had a fever, he said. Your eyes are bloodshot, and late hours have smooched half moons of charcoal under them. So as anyone could tell you that you are traveling straight plumb to the dogs.
Now that's my medical opinion as a manager. If you want a real doctor, good luck getting the league's HMO to cover it.
Reynolds muttered inarticulately.
Yes, that's where you're bound, continued the manager. I'm not old enough to be your father, but I've been kicking around in this world for some 15 or 16 years longer than you have.
That's right. You were spitting up your pablum while I was dancing at my quinceañera. You should have seen me. Oh, the sequins were glorious.
And I've had plenty of chance to learn that a pitcher or any other ball player can't work his battery mate with old demon booze and last long in the diamond game.
Maybe in wiffle ball, the cubic zirconium game, but not baseball.
You were the best pitcher on my staff last year, and you twirled your team into a championship. But now you're a-hitting the toboggan just as fast as anyone can.
But no one gets paid to toboggan. Well, actually, I think Eddie the Eagle just got a Red Bull endorsement for that.
So heartwarming, that story.
I saw the movie on an airplane, which is probably the ideal way to do that.
Yeah, it's like Rudy without any sympathetic characters.
Oh, come on, you can barely see.
When you're sober and in good physical condition, there isn't a better man who ever towed the slab than you are. And that's why I haven't traded you during the past month.
Well, that and I got you on my DraftKings Fantasy League, and I don't want to rock the boat.
I hoped you'd wake up and cut out the booze and the gang of high-living sports you were traveling with, but if you don't get your eyes open and quit drinking before we start on the Western trip, I'll try to make a deal with some other club and trade you before the other managers get wise to the fact that you are drinking yourself out of the game.
Reynolds mumbled something. What? Keneally asked. I guess some of those other managers will be glad to get me, Reynolds repeated.
Yes, until they found out you were a souse, Keneally added. And then they'd shunt you back to the minors and double quick. You'd probably last a year or two in the bushes.
Maybe more, if you were on the Bear Grylls show, but there are cameras everywhere, so it's not real like Survivor Man.
And then some little one-horse minor league outfit would give you your own unconditional release, and you'd have been a has-been while you were yet a kid. Some future, eh?
Oh, yeah, it's the darkest timeline imaginable. Oh, a washed-up ball player? Glad things aren't that bad here in 2018.
Yep, things are going pretty great.
Sure.
Reynolds slouched against the bureau, his hands deep in his pockets. A sullen, defiant expression distorted his features. Keneally wiped a handkerchief across his forehead. And then he washed the window. Then he gave the bureau a quick wipe. And then he decided to freshen up the doorknob while he was there. And then he did the worm on the floor for a few minutes.
I'll be hanged if I know why I've stood for your drinking in violation of training rules as long as I have, he exclaimed.
Possibly something to do with the fact that I don't actually play any baseball and really barely affect the outcome of the game and therefore need good players.
I reckon it's because I remember what a likable, clean young duffer you were when I first bought you from that little bush league up country.
As he paused, the manager happened to glance past the ball player at a picture standing on the bureau. It was a photograph of a girl in her early 20s, and the face, the expression of the eyes, the mouth, and chin portrayed that rare combination of beauty of character as well as of feature.
Yeah, I'm a student of the science-ish discipline of chinology, and her character is obviously very outgoing in parts, but also introspective in the dimple area. Basically, it's the same reading for everybody, except for fat people who might have double or even triple personalities.
It's not an exact science.
It's an exact science-ish.
Hey, pseudoscience still has science in it.
Right.
The manager pointed toward the picture.
It's got more than science. It's got pseudo in addition to science.
The manager pointed toward the picture.
To ask a personal question, Rube, he began. Is she your sister?
To ask a second, is she available? Now, questions 3 through 17 are going to go way past personal and may push some societal boundaries.
Following the direction of Canaly's extended finger, Reynolds shook his head. Canaly's eyes gleamed in satisfaction. Another avenue of appeal was open.
All right. Fourth Circuit, not like those Ninth Circuit hardasses.
Oh, those guys.
Then she must be your sweetheart. For I know that you're not married, he stated, and he added earnestly, I suppose you hope to be married someday.
Yeah, that's the phrase women use about alcoholic bachelors. He seems like a great guy, but he's got a hope of commitment.
Reynolds failed to reply. His liquor-inflamed brain was busy mobilizing the little devils of rage and rebellion. What right had Keneally to catechize him, he angrily pondered.
Well, he's an ordained manager. It's a spiritual calling as much as a job.
Who gave the manager a license to butt into his private life?
Why don't you quit the booze and go straight, for her sake, if not for your own? The manager inquired after an interval. You can hardly expect a decent girl, like the original of that picture must be, to marry a drunken sot. Such as you continuing your present pace will make you.
Well, she might be hoping she can change him into clean clothing when he comes home smelling like Bud Limeritas at 5:30 a.m. every day of her life.
She just sticks to it. Drunken sot. No decent girl would marry him, even through his liquor-soaked brain. Reynolds realized that the words rang true.
But his liquor-soaked genitals presented a different argument. Groupies.
But their very truth was like the red rag fluttered before the bull.
You're a liar, he rasped.
And he sprang toward the manager, one fist lunging forward as he leaped. Though heavily built, Keneally was quick on his feet. Swiftly, he sidestepped and parried the blow. Reynolds whirled about and rushed a second time. Again and again his fist struck out, and Keneally took blow after blow on his hands and arms, turning them all aside.
Yeah, that's one of the less thrilling scenes from The Legend of Drunken Batter.
No knitting mysteries in this one? Obsessed by his whiskey-stimulated wrath, Reynolds forgot all his knowledge of boxing. His one thought was to beat down the big man before him, who so steadily blocked the punches and kept forcing him backward without striking a blow. Back, step by step they went, until Reynolds stumbled. Instantly the manager closed in, grasping the pitcher's wrists and endeavoring to force him down into a chair.
I said get comfy, damn ya!
Back and forth they struggled, reeling about the room, until, with a crash, they brought up against the bureau.
Now I'm gonna sock you until you're slack on the floor, and then you can card again when... Nope, should have stopped at two.
With a sudden twist, Reynolds wrenched one hand free from the manager's vice-like grip. The pitcher reached behind him and groped over the bureau top. And an instant afterward, something flashed through the air, thudding dully against the manager's head. Reynolds heard a gasp, and the fingers about his wrist relaxed. The manager's knees buckled forward, and he crumpled backward on the rug, a motionless heap. I'm surprised.
I'm a little.
Yeah, that took a turn. Carrying on. Breathing heavily, Reynolds stood above the inert form, a heavy brass ashtray still grasped in his fist. Particles of blood dotted its edge.
Knock, knock, Mr. Reynolds. There's a gang of kids here calling themselves the Bad News Bears, and they've come to convince you to give up alcohol and coach them one last time, and...
He strangled her, right?
That was the titular shock.
The shock. For a moment, brute satisfaction was reflected from his face. Then his expression changed to that of alarm. Why did Keneally lie so still? Why was the fallen man's face so pale?
Gee, I don't know, George. I just said hello to him with this heavy ashtray.
Dropping to his knees, Reynolds pressed a hand against the manager's shirt front. The pitcher's hand was trembling, and his own heart pounding furiously, as he fumbled anxiously about on the manager's breast.
Yeah, maybe he's got an EpiPen on him. That'll fix him right up.
Nothing cures a bash to the head from a big ashtray like an EpiPen. Maybe right. Some Band-Aids or Neosporin.
Oh, those paddles. Oh, I should have gotten some of those paddles.
He could feel no action, and a crimson stain, like red ink on a sheet of blotting paper, was spreading with ragged circumference upon the manager's hair.
You know, Rob, I'm having trouble drawing a straight line from the current scene to a fun Casey at the Bat style slice of Americana. I was sort of expecting this story to get to.
Yeah, me too. I was thinking this would be a little more of a, you know, major league type situation than
the Natural Born Killers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pitcher grasped the manager's shoulders and shook the death-like form. Keneally! Keneally! Owen Keneally! He cried. He jumped to his feet and seized the water pitcher, pouring all of the stale fluid it contained over the manager's face. But the eyes remained closed, the form still.
Well, I guess that rules out him just being contact drunk from all the open liquor bottles laying around. You gotta double check that.
This is looking grim, just say that.
Yeah.
Slowly, Reynolds backed away from the prostrate man. Heavens, he whispered. He's dead. I'm a murderer.
And we're gonna need a new manager. Can this day get any worse?
And with the words came another thought. He'd killed Keneally. They would arrest him. Into his vision flashed the picture of a chair with straps on its arms, legs, and back, and a few solemn spectators gathered about.
And if I know baseball fans, multiple hecklers yelling, "You couldn't throw a party."
Swing, bada bada bada, swing that switch. We need a pitcher, not a manager killer.
Yes, Warden, we've just got a call from the governor. He says, balk.
No, they mustn't catch him. He must get away. Moving hurriedly about and ever averting his gaze from the form on the floor, he donned a few garments for streetwear.
Oh, yeah, when you're fleeing a murder scene, you want to be coordinated but casual. It's about stylish comfort. You know, save the expensive suit for a special occasion like your sentencing hearing.
At least he had that head start with the scarf. That's something. Ready to leave, he spied the picture upon the bureau. He snatched it up and turned it over. Penned on its back in a feminine hand was, "From Dora to Bob."
Can you point to her chin? Bueno!
If that backpack talks, I am done with this story. Hastily tucking it into his inside pocket, he opened the door and stepped into the hall. His nerveless fingers swung the door shut, and he trod softly down the stairs.
Mm.
Wow,
With that change of direction, why don't we do our own change of direction to a bumper?
Sounds good. Sally, been thinking about asking our listeners, popping them the big question.
Okay.
It's not an easy one. I think now is the time for us to both get on our knees and look deep, deep into our listeners' ears and
what?
And ask them sincerely and with conviction, will you rate and review us on iTunes?
Okay, we're on our knees. Where are their ears?
They're going to have to bend down too. Everyone, get on your knees.
Okay, wait a minute. I don't think we want to ask our listeners to do that. You know what I think we do want to ask them to do?
What?
Is to please go to iTunes, rate and review the podcast. If you like what we do, help us out. It's free for you. It's a great thing for us. Rob, can you say anything else without making inappropriate requests from our audience?
You rate and review us on any of the other services too. Google Play, they're awesome. Whether you do it on your knees or not, I leave it up to you. That's your business. Thank you, folks. We appreciate it.
When the evening train coughed into Farm Hill Station, Reynolds, clad in a dark suit and with his cloth hat pulled far down over his eyes, swung off on the side farthest from the station, and making a detour to avoid the well-lighted section of the town, he struck out into the country. Once during his flight, while changing trains at a junction, he had heard one diminutive newsboy mention the name Reynolds to another grimy-faced little urchin, and Rube had stolen a sidelong glance at the bunch of papers folded beneath the boy's arm.
But then he sighed in relief when he looked back at the pack of aluminum foil under the other boy's arm. So, strange coincidence.
It's possible.
Yeah, well, he needed aluminum foil, so.
The paper, being folded in the middle, prevented him from reading the whole of the big black headline. But on the side of the sheet near to him, he spelled out M-U-R-D.
Okay, hold on, Rob. We should not jump to conclusions. I've got a dictionary here. Let's see. It could be, okay, Murdabad, all right, Indian, down with or death to, okay.
Down with the sickness?
Yes, that too. Murdrum. That's an old English word, meaning the killing of a human being in the secret manner. Okay, you know what? I think he should maybe start running.
As he tramped along in the soft dust of the country road, with the frogs and insects peeping and shrilling strange noises out of the dusk of the night, his thoughts rose in rebellion. It wasn't murder?
No, no, it was over-enthusiastic dispute mediation.
Murder was something fearful, something repulsive, and he had it intended to kill Keneally. He had struck in self-defense. He strove to convince himself that such had been the case, but every frog, every insect kept trilling, murder, murder, it was murder.
Oh, guys, come on. I already got this with his heart under the floorboards that wouldn't shut up. Don't you start.
Not until he reached the Watley farm did he realize that it would be impossible for him to see Dora that night.
Night blindness, yeah. You gotta take more vitamin A for that.
The chimes of a church in a distant town were sounding the curfew hour when he paused by the stone wall encircling that part of the Watley farm. Why he had returned to Farm Hill, he did not know. Something had seemed to draw him to that little town in the valley.
Well, it might have been a desire to recapture some tiny part of his old life, or it might have been that bag of fake passports and cash he'd buried in case of murdering someone.
Either way, he needs the time, you know, just to reflect. And he wanted to see Dora just once more before disappearing to some far corner of the world, where no one would know him, where no one could find him. For a moment, he thought of boldly entering the house, but he could quickly dismiss the idea. They must have read the papers and knew of his crime.
Well, aren't we important, Mr. Athlete? Sorry, I don't know and I don't care who won your little sports ball series, and I certainly don't bother with all the latest news about who murdered who a few miles from my home.
Noel Whatley and his wife had always liked young Bob Reynolds and Dora. He knew that Dora's regard was more than friendship for him, but he hesitated to thrust himself, branded as a criminal, into that family circle.
Oh, no, no, it's no trouble at all. Why don't you come in for meatloaf, and we'll have a nice chat about the moral and legal quandary you've put us in on account of my daughter going to a AA game and thinking your ass looked good in pinstripes. Although, now that I think about it, the uniform thing really applies either way, so... you just set the table while I run out for help, hamburger helper.
He easily vaulted the stone wall and moved around the house to the barn. As he picked his way across the barnyard, another thought came to him. What folly his return to Farm Hill was. It would only make more painful the breaking of the ties.
And their extradition laws are very similar to where I just came from.
It's going to be really easy to get him transferred back.
Yeah.
I mustn't see her, he whispered to himself. But no train left the town until early morning, so he resolved to stay in the barn until nearly daylight, and then return to the station. As he neared the barn, a prolonged sniff caused him to start and crouch near to the ground. Then he remembered. It was Wolf the dog.
Oh, you mean Wolf the dog, the bounty hunter? He's even meaner than his brother.
Wolf the dog, the bounty hunter.
They gave him the nickname the dog because he's mean.
So he's Wolf the dog.
No, he's Wolf the bounty hunter. And then in between, in quotations, the dog. Brother to dog, the bounty hunter. Listen, I don't have the family tree in front of me.
The companion who had accompanied Dora and him on their tramps across the fields and on their fishing trips to the lake. Wolf, he called softly. The big collie came bounding through the darkness. Still, Wolf, be still, boy, he commanded. To his relief, the dog recognized him and refrained from barking.
Now, play dead. I need to get my story straight, and it's best if I recreate the scene of the crime.
Where's that ashtray? Two paws pressed against his knee, and the animal whined joyously. Go back, Wolf, he ordered, as he patted and fondled the collie. Reluctantly, the dog turned toward his kennel, and Reynolds slid open the door of the barn. A restless horse tramped in his stall, and a frightened rat scuttled across the floor.
A frightened rat? Boy, that's how you know you're really out in the country.
As he felt about in the darkness and found the ladder leading upward, nimbly he ascended to the loft, and creeping far over to the wall, he stretched himself upon the odorous hay. He closed his eyes, but sleep would not come. He faintly heard the clock in the farmhouse striking the hour.
Ten chimes. Let me do the conversion. That's last call standard time minus 4.5 hours.
That's the whiskey hour, right?
I mean, whatever. That's appetizer hour. That's...
Half price margaritas.
Apps and... I don't know what else you could get with your apps.
More apps.
Apps and apps. It rhymes.
All right, Chili's. I got your next big ad. All right. It's going to be half price apps and apps. Because it rhymes. See? The kids, they love apps and they love apps. Apps and apps.
Yeah. We got you Jungle Jewels and jalapeno papas. We got Candy Crush and cannoli poppers.
It's foolproof, I tells you.
We got Bejeweled which is, I don't know, we take some rocks and make them into pappas.
After an age of sleeplessness, it tinkled again. The smell of the sun-dried grass brought remembrance of his boyhood, and he thought of the plans he and Dora had made for the future.
Plans involving a family, baseball, and manslaughter, sure, but also simpler plans that would only result in criminal neglect.
It's good to have backup plans, you know?
You don't want to dream too big.
Then he remembered the good fellows of the city, with their invitations to have another, and their shallow praise. He groaned in despair. He had severed himself from all of the real joys of life, and now he was but a hunted thing, to prowl forever from place to place in his efforts to escape the relentless hand of the law.
The relentless but definitely delayed and prompt and diligent response hand of the law.
As he lay there, an almost uncontrollable desire to scratch a match, that he might relieve the awful blackness, possessed him. I can't, he reflected. It might set fire to the place.
And arson never solved anything when the victim's body was in a totally different building. It just doesn't make sense.
Man, if you'd only thought about that a few hours ago. Suddenly.
Oh dear, there seems to be a lot of smoke coming from that room. Excuse me, Mr. Reynolds, are you smoking again?
I hope the loud argument, the sudden thud on the floor didn't have anything to do with it.
Somebody might have knocked over a curling iron.
Suddenly he sat up, gasping, with a whistling intaking of breath. What had he heard? Again they came. The faint strains of music were permeating the loft, as if some stringed instrument was being played close by. He dug his fingers into his ears, hoping that the sounds might be the product of his imagination. But no! As he removed his fingers, they continued, a strange, weird tune, unlike anything he had ever heard before.
Yeah, I have heard Trout Mask Replica. Yeah, I know you think it's amazing. We'll just agree to disagree. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I'm willing to admit I don't get it. I'm missing out. Sure, that will end this convert. No, I don't want to hear it played as the soundtrack to Koyaanisqatsi.
Koyaanisqatsi. Sorry. It's the actual soundtrack. Again, he jammed his fingers into his ears to shut out the sounds. Had his crime driven him mad? Was he haunted? He wondered fearfully.
I am the spectral form of your manager, and I eternally curse you to faintly hear Zydeco music coming from somewhere over there.
That is a hell on earth. With unsteady, trembling legs, he made his way to the ladder and lowered himself downward. He crouched in an unoccupied stall and waited. A rat squeaked beside him, but he failed to move.
Really? Okay, I'm just going to take a test nibble, and if you still don't move, I'm going to have to claim squatter's rights.
I'm sorry, this is my side of the barn. You could try Willie over there. He lost his teeth years ago, but he's going to crawl you. He was listening for that fearsome music, and whenever he closed his eyes, the white face of Keneally would spring before his vision. Of what avail was his freedom if this continued, he thought. Ideas of giving himself up entered his mind, but he remembered the high-backed chair with its straps and its horrible death-dealing wires. What a death. No, he couldn't surrender himself. But still, if he was to be forever haunted, why, maybe it would be better. Maybe it... With a start, Reynolds awoke. Not from sound sleep, but from one of the fitful dozes.
Yeah, the kind of dozing you do when you're sleeping next to a rat, and you haven't built up a Count of Monte Cristo sort of tolerance for that yet.
Takes a few decades. Into which he had lapsed just before the gray light of morning began to lighten the barn. With an ejaculation of self-rebuke, he sprang up and stood, blinking, in the shaft of sunlight, which blazed through a cobwebby, dusty window. He, who had intended to depart before sunrise, had overslept.
Oh, God, that's terrible. Oh, I wish I could just turn back time, say 3 or 4 hours max.
That's all he needs, right?
Then he can totally make it to the train.
He could hear persons moving about in the farmhouse, as well as the occasional rattling of crockery and the sputter of grease in a frying pan. Then footsteps sounded outside of the barn, and before he could turn, could dart to cover, the door slid back, and a girl stood before him. Her face, crowned by a wavy mass of fine-spun fair hair, was the flesh-and-blood likeness of that portrayed by the picture he carried in his pocket.
You gotta check the chin to be sure, though.
Chin never lies, Alan. She wore neither hat nor bonnet, and a dotted bungalow apron covered her from shoulder to ankles. She stared in amazement, her brows puckering as she noted the rumpled condition of his clothing, his drawn features, and his bloodshot eyes. "Why, Bob!" she exclaimed perplexedly. "What? Why? How?"
All valid questions for the Arthur, Ron.
As she paused, he moved forward a step, his nails biting into the palms of his clenched fists. Oh, how he longed to take her in his arms and tell her the whole miserable story.
Oh, yeah, she's gonna love that. So that's how I became an alcoholic and killed a man. Now, let's move on to everything I hated about the last girl I dated.
He's a charmer. Little beads of moisture surged into his eyes, and in a moment she was close to him, resting her hands on his shoulders. "Tell me, Bob," she said anxiously. "Tell me, what is the matter? Why didn't you come to the house? Why are your clothes all messed up?" Choking back his emotions, he hesitatingly placed his hands on her arms. "Don't you know?" he inquired brokenly. "Know what?" she demanded. He hesitated to say the words. "Heavens, Dora, you must have read last night's paper. Don't you know that I'm a murderer? Oh, Dora, I'm a murderer!"
"Hey, well, you know, saying it out loud actually kind of makes me feel better. I'm a murderer. I have murdered in the past and possibly will murder in the future. God, that feels good to get out. Yeah. How about brunch?"
Acceptance is the next step in the process. Her fingers clenched convulsively through his coat and pinched into his shoulders. "I've killed a man. The man who was giving me a chance," he groaned. "All because of the cursed drink."
"Oh, yeah. Shandy Bass. It's ruined a lot of lives."
And with his head bowed on his shoulder, he poured forth the story of his fight with Keneally, of his trip to Farm Hill, and of his night in the barn. Then his arms relaxed, and he gently tried to push her away. "Don't touch me, girl."
"Don't touch me, girl" was a hit for Gary Puckett when he was in his second band, Gary Puckett and the Appropriate Age Gap.
There's nothing I like better than a Gary Puckett reference. Gene Pitney was, I think, the only better reference than Gary Puckett.
Well, he didn't write as many songs about underage women.
It's true. It's true. He told her, "I'm a murderer, not fit to touch." Her arm slipped about his neck, and she held him closer. "I won't leave you. I won't," she cried. "Oh, Bob. Don't you know that I love you? We'll go somewhere together."
"I'm thinking prison, but we don't have to decide right now."
"No," he protested. "Why, Dora, I'm haunted. I lay up there in the loft last night and heard music. That dreadful, unearthly music. And his face kept coming before me out of the darkness. No, I'm going to give myself up and have it over with." With the passion and entreaty of one who loved, she argued, but he steadily persisted in his resolve. He gently drew her arms from about his neck, she made one final appeal.
"Wait, Bob," she pleaded. "Let me go into the house and get last night's paper. I'm sure there wasn't any murder headline on it."
"It was something about Jennifer Aniston and Justin Theroux breaking up. That was In Style magazine, but they stay very up to date."
"When will Jennifer find true love, Alan?"
"Boy, it's been a rough ride."
And she darted from the stable. Her mother, busy in the kitchen, glanced up in surprise at the flushed cheeks and excited eyes of the girl.
"What in the world?"
she began, but Dora interrupted. "Where's last night's paper, Mother?"
"In order? Birdcage, paper mache globe, and the bathroom downstairs only your dad uses, so pretty much unrecoverable."
"Yeah, that's a no-touch."
"On the sitting room table, I think," Mrs. Whatley replied.
Dora hurried from the room. The paper was not on the sitting room table, and she searched frantically about the room. Finally, she found it, half hidden under a pillow on the lounge, where her father had left it the evening before. Spreading out the first page, she read, "Murdoch testifies. Iron King goes before congressional committee."
"Iron King Murdoch only comes to mock your pitiful congress of non-metallic flesh beings. Also, Iron King, very close to tell-all book deal that publicist says to get name out there."
Nowhere on the page was Reynolds' name mentioned. She hurriedly rustled over page after page until at last, on one of the sporting pages, she discovered a small paragraph commenting on his poor pitching of the day previous.
"Bob Reynolds hoped he would kill it out on the diamond yesterday, but instead got slaughtered in an 0-14 shutout. Reynolds pitched a criminal 7.4 ERA, and in the dead of the ninth inning, even the hometown crowd looked ready to hang him up or put him in the electric chair, as the very common saying among Sox fans goes."
"Bravo. Bravo. Mwah. That's what that is. That is fabulous." Paper in hand, she sped back to the barn. Reynolds was not in sight.
"Bob,"
she called softly, but received no answer. Into the loft she climbed, but he was not there. As she stood on the hay, she became aware of a peculiar sound. Music.
"Music, is that what they call it? And here I've been listening to the radio and assuming it was some kind of audio braille. You know, for the blind."
That was what it resembled. And across her mind flashed the words of Bob. For some seconds she listened in bewilderment, and then the little wrinkles of perplexity cleared from her forehead. She climbed higher up the hay until she reached a tiny window, far up near the roof. Over its opening were stretched several taut elastics, the work of her little brother. With each gust of breeze they vibrated and twanged, making sounds not unlike the music of a harp or a zither.
That's exactly what made the Third Man theme song so haunting. The rubber band playing.
Bling, bang,
bang, bling, 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 bling.
Descending from the loft, she hurried out of the barn. The man whom she loved must have taken advantage of her absence to hasten away, she reasoned, that he might carry out his resolve to surrender himself to the authorities. So down the dusty road she hurried, determined to overtake him ere he should reach the town.
Horse right here, lady. I couldn't help but notice you don't have a car and appear to have urgent business. Seems like a real opportune moment in the plot for a horse. Really? Fine. Okay, go on. Upstaged by a rat and three rubber bands. You gotta be pulling my tail. A little horse humor while I talk to myself. You know, I gotta laugh or I'm gonna cry.
Glad we got to hear from the horse. Really, really made the story more interesting.
Well,
I'll tell you what it made me do. It made me stay wide awake. a, A great gray touring car hummed its way along the country road, a continuous cloud of dust, like rising smoke, trailing in its wake. A big burly man with tanned features and whose eyes were obscured by masking goggles gripped the wheel, while beside him sat another man, not so big, but with a bristling black mustache and keen, piercing eyes.
"Remember, Mac," the big man was saying, "if we find him, I don't want the newspaper men or anybody else to ever hear a word of this. I called on you for help because you are a friend of mine as well as a police inspector, trained in the ways of tracing men."
Yeah, I mean, if you mean skinwalking, I definitely don't do that. I'm winking. I don't know if you can see that through the goggles, so I also said it.
"Don't you worry, Owen," the other replied. "Never a word will get out. 9 times out of 10, a young fellow who has committed a crime, or thinks he has, will risk a trip to his home or old surroundings."
"And in fact, the younger the fellow, the more likely he is to be near home. 3 or 4 year olds that commit crimes can almost always be found within a few dozen yards of their house."
This guy was a detective.
Yeah, he knows his stuff.
"If we don't find the boy somewhere about Farm Hill, we'll change our tactics. He must have landed quite a crack on your skull," he added.
"He surely did," the big man agreed. "I was unconscious for a half hour or more, and I guess your idea that he imagined he'd finished me and was thus frightened into running away is right."
"And while we're on the subject of improbable but true ideas, I guess you're probably right that he also must have thought it was a pool of blood under my head and not a bottle of Cholula I had brought him to spice up his hangover breakfast, which had broken while I fell."
"All the pieces fit together."
"You sure do."
The man with the wiry mustache nodded and tightly gripped the side of the car as they jounced over a particularly high bump in the road.
"But if the experience proves to be the shock necessary to break the boy away from the drink and that gang he was traveling with," continued the big man, "why, I'll be mighty thankful that he struck the blow."
"Yes, in fact, I'll again it say, mighty that thankful he be blow the struck. To go hospital, should I maybe the?"
Concussion protocol in 1916.
"Talking about not, I do know."
"He's not only a wonderful pitcher, but I like him. He, look, Mac, look. So help me, John Rogers. Look ahead there."
Peering around a bend in the roadway, from behind the trees of the roadside, a solitary figure was tramping toward them.
Claudette Colbert?
Claudette Colbert.
It's her. From what I've seen in movies, it's usually her.
Yeah, agreed. I hope it's her. That'll be awesome. Stopping the engine and jamming his foot against the brake pedal, the big man jerked the car to an abrupt stop beside the young fellow, who had turned and halted by the edge of the road, waiting for the automobile to pass.
Now he's a model citizen. Jaywalking. Well, no, that's not for me.
"Rube!"
the big man cried, pushing his goggles up on his forehead and springing from the car. The man by the roadside stood as if paralyzed. He stared wildly at the big man who had leaped from the automobile.
"Keneally!" came from between his lips in a throaty whisper. "Keneally! Owen Keneally!
Back from the dead. You won't drag me to hell, demon."
He slowly, fearfully extended a hand as if to touch the big manager, to make sure that he was a reality and not the fantasy of a haunted mind. The big man quickly reached forth and firmly grasped the hand.
"It's me, all right, Rube," he assured with the flicker of a smile. "It takes a mighty hard wallop to put out a tough old geezer like me down for good."
"Let's be honest, your arm strength isn't what it used to be. I mean, that ashtray fastball hit 70, maybe 75 miles per hour top. So, long story short, you're not a murderer, but you are cut."
Not a happy ending either way. Drawing free his hand, the young fellow dropped upon one knee in the dusty, sun-scorched grass on the roadside, and burying his face in his arm, he gave vent to his pent-up emotions, his body shaking with convulsive, boyish sobs of relief. The bareheaded girl, who had appeared around the bend of the road and was hurrying toward them, was unnoticed by Keneally and the inspector.
I'm glad, the kneeling man choked out. I'm going to stay away from the drink, and so help me heaven, I'll never touch another drop.
Oh, well, that's just fantastic. What do you say we all go out to a bar and celebrate? Slippery nipples on me.
All right, I hear it's apps and apps night.
I'm sorry, TGI Fridays has ended our apps and app promotion. You're going to have to leave your iPhone and Android device at the bar.
The big man rested a hand on the young fellow's shoulder.
No, I don't think you will drink anymore, boy.
Like you said, not a drop to drink, so it's only going to be sucking on cucumbers from here on out. Well, listen, if you cut them up, then it's easier to get to the cucumber pulp. Maybe you use a mandolin and just lick off what is gone in between the slices.
Not better.
Ugh. Well, no, you gotta be careful of your tongue. I'm not saying.
But, he continued, you are coming back with me, and I'll make you the greatest pitcher in the game. And you and the girl can marry and be happy.
Yeah, well, you can be happy in perpetuity. That's this word right here in the contract here. So now go ahead and sign this. You know, I've been thinking of calling myself Colonel Owen Keneally. What do you think about that?
This is clearly the best time to ever negotiate with anybody, ever.
Sure.
Before the young fellow could reply, the girl was beside him. Her eyes aglow, and her bosom rising and falling rapidly as she breathed. Many a picture of Owen Keneally had smiled at her from among the pages of newspapers, and she recognized the big man standing over Reynolds. Unmindful of the others, she dropped to her knees beside the man she loved, and with her arms about his neck, she murmured, "Oh, but I'm happy, Bob. I'm so happy."
Great, because I've been meaning to tell you about that hockey team I left under unusual circumstances.
The end. Wow. That was a roller coaster of a tale.
Yeah, it went up and down and up and a curveball to the left.
Oof, wow, I did not see that particular hit coming. She enjoyed this one, Alan, I think. And what do you think the moral of this particular story is?
Okay, it's a little hard to condense down, so I got a few bullet points here. Let's see. Number one, alcohol is bad.
Uh-huh.
Two, interventions need witnesses.
Fair point.
Three, the rubber band guitar my daughter made for her STEM project is clearly demonic in origin.
That's a given.
Number four, the automobile brought the end of horses with a neigh instead of a bang. Let's continue to number five. Number five, never sign anything without your criminal defense attorney reviewing it first.
Those are all very good morals. I think my moral is going to be a very, very simple one, which is don't just root around the chest if you think somebody's dead. Actually, you know, go for the pulse. Maybe call a doctor. Maybe a mirror under the nose. Something. This really all could have been avoided, and they could have been having a drink and a laugh right afterwards.
Really? Directly after his concussion and the blood pooling from his temple?
He's driving around in the country the very next day, Alan. This guy's okay. Obviously a quick recoverer.
All right. Well, maybe you're right, Ron. It was quite a shock.
Well, I think that about wraps it up for this week's episode, Alan. And I hope the listeners will tune in next time for another exciting interrupted.
What is it? Because I canter? What? I could gallop too. I just, come on, I got a free saddle right here.
Tail!